This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
So this talk is actually really a combined talk, sort of a combination of two topics, as you can see here, and also really combines some information you got in the first talk and the second, and hopefully without too much repetition. So I'll get right to it. These are my disclosures. This is the outline that I put together. So a little bit at the beginning about the current state of vascular access, which you heard about in more detail this morning, but I'm going to focus just on at initiation, the steps we need to take to get to a successful fistula at initiation, the barriers along the way, and then really the role of the nephrologist, just to give you guys a little bit of a peek sort of behind the curtain of how what we're thinking on our end, what's sometimes probably a black box to you a little bit. Focusing on these different questions about whether to start, when to start, predicting the need, which we just heard about, et cetera. So first of all, what are the guidelines? So you heard about guidelines that they're going to be updated, which is very exciting. But the current guidelines, this is those 2006 KDOQI guidelines that Dr. Loke talked about. And I also read the vascular surgery ones. They're very similar, but I put up here the nephrology ones since I'm the nephrologist. So the guidelines state that a patient with a GFR less than 30 should be educated on all modalities of kidney replacement therapy so that timely referral can be made for placement of a permanent access if necessary. And that patients should have a functional permanent access at the initiation of dialysis. And in order to achieve that a fistula should be placed at least 6 months before the anticipated start of hemodialysis treatments. And then catheters should be avoided, as we've talked about. So how do we achieve these guideline-recommended goals, and how are we doing? And you saw this slide, I think the exact same slide earlier, but this is just, again, to emphasize that 80% of plus of patients are starting with catheters. Still, and that really hasn't changed much over time. We saw that we're improving after patients start, but we haven't made much progress in this initiating phase. This is the follow-up that you saw as well. So again, we're doing better after they're on dialysis, more fistulas over time in the prevalent dialysis population. So what does it take for a patient to start dialysis with a fistula? First, we have to identify that the patient has CKD. They have to be referred to nephrology, educated about their dialysis choices, referred to vascular surgery, actually get the testing and the vascular surgery, and actually have the fistula mature. So it's a lot of steps, actually. It's not a simple thing. So let's talk about awareness. This is awareness from the patient point of view. This is from U.S. NHANES data, a national U.S. survey, and looking at respondents to that survey, they were asked whether they had ever been told that they had failing kidneys or problems with their kidneys, and this is by stage of CKD. By stage of CKD across the bottom here, and what you can see is that even at stage 4 CKD, which is GFR 15 to 29, only 40% of patients were actually aware that they had kidney disease. So if patients aren't aware that they have kidney disease, it's going to be difficult to get them to nephrologists and get them ready for dialysis, get them that education that the guidelines suggest they should be getting. This is looking at the percentage of patients seeing a nephrologist according to CKD stage. This turned out a little bit smaller than I might have liked. But in any case, what you can see here is that stage 3, 4, and 5 here, these are transplant patients, so we can ignore these for now. But again, we're only up to about 40% at stage 4, and it drops down at stage 5, and my guess is that that may be because of acute starts and things we've heard a little bit about, and I'm going to tell you a little bit more about. But anyway, so large percentage of patients not seeing nephrologists. This is data from the USRDS, And again, this is looking at the patients who are getting training and the pre-dialysis care. And again, just showing the same thing that, having trouble reading it, but in any case, that nephrology care is very low down here. And the blue bars are no care at all. And then it goes 6 to 12 months, et cetera, and 12 plus are these small bars here. So that only 35% of patients are seeing a nephrologist more than a year in order to be able to plan these dialysis accesses. Then using data from CMS, the USRDS folks did some analyses of predictors, odds ratios from models of fistula use at dialysis initiation, and not surprisingly, amount of time seen by a nephrologist was a very strong predictor, so that compared to those who had seen a nephrologist for more than a year, there was a progressively lower odds of having fistula if they were seen sooner, closer to the time of dialysis initiation. There were also some differences according to race, where African Americans were actually less likely as well. So more likely, according to what we just learned from Dr. Owens, to actually go on to dialysis, less likely to have a fistula when they get there. So that really may be an issue we need to think about a lot. So this is some data that some colleagues of mine and I collected a couple of years ago. We wanted to get a sense of what nephrologists were actually doing. And so we surveyed practicing nephrologists on the timing of vascular access placement. So we asked nephrologists at UCSF and San Diego and some medical directors attending a medical directors meeting and asked them, how many months before the initiation of dialysis do you think an AV fistula should be created? And the good news is they all said 6, at least on average, so maybe there's some awareness of the guidelines there. But then we drilled down and we said, well, at what estimated GFR do you think that it should be created? To try to get a sense, what are people thinking? What are people thinking is 6 months from the start of dialysis? And the answer was roughly around 18. Which is actually fairly close to what guidelines that have focused on EGFR have said, usually in the range of 15 to 20. So there really seemed like in this smallish sample of nephrologists from different places that there was a fair amount of agreement, so nephrologists know what to do. And then we also asked them what they thought the trade-off, what they thought the probability of ESRD in the next year should be, in order to think about it. And again, this came out quite consistently, about two-thirds. So nephrologists thought there should be about a two-thirds chance, a 67% chance that the patient was going to end up on dialysis over the next year, and that would be the threshold to start dialysis access. So then we looked. I'll go back to that later. So how true is this? You know, are patients who have an EGFR of 18, you know, likely to go on dialysis? Is that a good number? What's going on? Can we really predict that? These are some data that Anne O'Hare and colleagues collected, VA data as well, actually, on some 5,000 veterans. Looking at patients who started dialysis within the VA and going backwards 2 years from then to look and see what was the trajectory of their kidney disease. And they identified these four different patterns of trajectory. They identified patients with just a slow and gradual progression, and about 63% had that pattern. 25% had this fairly steady but steeper decline in kidney function. And then around 12% had these much more sudden declines from higher levels of GFR, so that they started at levels that were almost normal 2 years before dialysis and then ended up on dialysis. And if you look at where these numbers sort of cross, these are quarters, so 8 quarters, so let's see, so right here is about a year before starting dialysis. And if you look at that, you would say that 18 is possibly even is about right for this group, and the rest of the groups you would miss. But, you know, it looks really neat when they did it this way. This is combining all the data and smoothing it out, and there were 5,000 patients. But I thought it was interesting to look at it more granularly. So when they just put some representative actual trajectories in here, even in this group one that was slowly progressing, but especially in the group two, I think you can see that the way it progresses is not really all that steady in an individual patient. Individual patients have these ups and downs and these sudden declines at the end, and that was particularly true in the other groups. So I think, you know, as Dr. Loke said, sort of in defense of me and my colleagues, one big problem is these sudden declines in kidney function that can come along and make it difficult to predict. Another thing that has gone on where there's disagreement actually in the nephrology community, although maybe we're coming back together, is actually when should we start dialysis? So if we are thinking about getting them to having a catheter there, and we saw pretty good agreement about that, what about when to start dialysis? What's been happening is a progressive, up until about 2010, a progressive increase on average in the GFR at which patients were starting dialysis. So this is from the USRDS, the United States Renal Registry, so essentially all patients starting dialysis in the U.S. And if you look, so this is eGFR less than 5, 5 to 10, 10 to 15, and greater than 15. Keep doing that. And what you can see is fewer patients starting at less than 5, and even 5 to 10, and more patients starting above. And this trend was pretty pronounced until about 2010, and now has stabilized, it looks like. So what's going on with that? Why did that happen? Is that something that has there been a change in what's happening? Is that a reasonable thing? And again, Dr. O'Hare did some investigation to try to look at that. You know, what's going on with dialysis initiation again in the VA? As Dr. Owens pointed out, the VA is a wonderful system to study because you can really identify patients before they start. And you can even look at electronic records and even get actual data of what physicians were writing in the chart, et cetera. But in any case, this analysis was almost 1,700 patients, and they looked at the setting of dialysis as initiation first, and 75% of these patients were initiating dialysis as inpatients, and 50% of the total population was acutely ill at dialysis initiation. So again, this is the point of difficulties predicting who and when this is going to happen. 5% were initiated based solely on estimated kidney function in this study from what they could tell looking at the charts. And then they broke it down into two time periods because, as I had just showed you, the timing has been changing. So they looked at an earlier time period and a later time period, and then they looked at potential symptoms, reasons why patients might have been started on dialysis, GI symptoms, cardiopulmonary, fluid overload, et cetera. And what they found was really not a lot of difference in that. So it's not that patients were developing more symptoms. Symptoms and the reasons were very similar, which really makes me think that what's going on is it's an issue of the threshold at which we call those symptoms dialysis worthy, and I'll talk about that a little bit more later. Here I wanted to show you something that Dr. Owens really touched on, which is the fact that age can affect the outcomes in CKD. And this is one of my favorite, or maybe least favorite, graphs that I've seen. This is a graph, again, from VA data, large groups of VA patients. And what they did was they looked at the risk of death and the risk of ESRD according to age groups. And so they just plotted it out, and in the gray here is where the risk of ESRD was greater than the risk of death. The black is risk of death greater. And what you can see is that, you know, over age 85, there's no eGFR low enough that the risk of ESRD is actually higher than death. But if you move it back, even in 75-year-olds, the eGFR has to be about 15 before the risk of ESRD is actually higher than the risk of death, which just really gets at this question of, while we're always told we need to be preparing and we need to be sending people, if we're sending those patients at 18, then more are going to die with a working access than are going to reach dialysis with a working access, even if they all mature. They then took those data to create a hypothetical ratio of unnecessary to necessary fistula if all the patients with the EGFR less than 25, which might be a little high based on what we said before. But in any case, this is what they did. They just looked at it, and they found that even if you consider dialysis within 2 years, patients 85 and up would have something like more than almost a five-fold ratio of fistulas that don't get used to fistulas that do. And if you think about dialysis within 1 year, it's about 8 to 1. And even 6 months, it's 12 to 1. So anyway, if we take the 1 year, which is what our guidelines are telling us, you know, even in 75-year-olds, you're at about 5 to 1. So this is an issue for us. We don't get this right a lot, as you know. We're starting a lot of patients with fistulae, but this is the flip side of it, is we're putting fistulae in people who aren't going on to dialysis. This slide I threw in just sort of for completeness sake, but I figure you guys know this better than I do, which is that even when you place these accesses, they don't always mature, and it's a overall, again, based on USRDS data, from Crown Web here at in the U.S., it's 36% of accesses that are placed beforehand are failing and not being able to use, not being usable when dialysis starts. This is getting back to that other study that I talked to you about before, where we surveyed the nephrologist. After we surveyed the nephrologist, we then looked at our own data at our center, and this is actually UCSF, not VA at UC in San Francisco. And we looked at patients who were referred and who got preemptive vascular access placement. So we had 116 patients over the time period, about a 10-year period, I think, who had preemptive access placed. And these are the patient's characteristics here. A mean age was 64, not surprisingly, 94% of them were fistulae and 6% grafts. And we just looked at what happened. What happened to those 116 people? Did they, within 1 year, what percentage of them reached dialysis? And the answer there was just about half. Another 55% didn't have hemodialysis, any kind of this should say dialysis rather than hemodialysis, because there were two who started peritoneal dialysis, one who got a transplant. So surprisingly, there were no deaths in this study. We're a relatively younger age for this. So in any case, half the time, those patients didn't need dialysis within a year, even when they didn't die. So I guess I would wrap up this by saying we're doing our best, but we really aren't doing well, and we do need better data on predicting who's going to need dialysis and when. And then what I wanted to segue to is the part about transitioning the patients. The other piece of it that some of the speakers have touched on is talking to the patients and figuring out patients' goals and educating the patients. And so, you know, this is, I think, a really important piece, and this is hard because this takes time. Patients want to know when we think they need dialysis, and I've just shown you how good we are at that. And patients want to know what's going to trigger dialysis initiation. And I think this is the piece why I wanted to show the data about the symptoms and how they've changed or haven't changed, because this is the area where I really do think from our side, from the nephrologist side, we need to think harder about this, and we need to come to a better consensus about this, because there is a wide variety of opinions. Some nephrologists will say, oh, there's a uremic symptom, we should start dialysis. And so my own philosophy is a little different from that. And I try to spend time with the patient. So we've developed, I've been lucky enough to work with Dr. Owens at the VA, so we have fabulous vascular access colleagues who are thinking about these things, which is just terrific. And we are developing a transitions clinic at the VA now, where patients who are getting very advanced CKD can come, and we can spend a little bit more time going through these things, because what really has become clear is that it's impossible to discuss this all at once. So we do an iterative process, but basically when the burden of symptoms becomes bothersome enough that the burden of dialysis is going to be acceptable in order to relieve those. So not when they have uremic symptoms, but when those symptoms are bad enough that it's worth this huge lifestyle change of going on dialysis is what we try to work with the patients to try to figure that out. However, it's really important in light of the data that we've already shown you that we also have to tell them, but it could be when there's an urgent indication. You could get sick. There could be a sudden decline in kidney function when another illness comes along. And it's really important to talk to patients about sort of balancing these risks. The risk that if we wait longer to put in a fistula, they might urgently start dialysis and need a catheter versus the idea of putting an access in prophylactically. And different patients view those risks and benefits differently. And I just put this medical management on there just to show you there's other stuff we do too. But I'm not. That's not the topic today. So how do we do this discussion of trajectory of dialysis? There have been a few qualitative studies recently that have been very interesting to me. This one study that came out a few years ago interviewed 11 nephrologists and 29 patients who were over 65. And they identified these six themes about how the trajectory is discussed and understood. And the first thing was patients are shocked by their diagnosis. Absolutely true. Patients are uncertain how their disease will progress, which is not surprising since nephrologists are too. Patients lack preparation for living with dialysis. And then on the nephrology side, we struggle to explain the illness complexity. Nephrologists felt that they manage a disease over which they have little control. And nephrologists tend to avoid discussions about the future, which is exactly what we need to be having if we want to try to get patients to dialysis with an access. And then they had a conclusion, which was that nephrologists routinely encouraged patients to undergo preemptive vascular access placement, but only 2 of 11 patients had actually done so. And one patient described the challenge of considering surgery for access when he feels good, which is exactly the issue. That's when we are trying to get them to go for surgery. So, in terms of communication, again, communication, I think on the nephrologist side and the surgery side, it's important that we explain the steps involved and the expected time frame. So, you know, they're feeling good. What we have to tell them is we're not putting this access in so that you can dialyze tomorrow, but this process is going to involve vein mapping, a clinic evaluation, a preoperative evaluation, and a surgery, and then very importantly, a variable maturation period. So we need to think about this when we're several months out, we need to make sure that the patients really understand that. So that they don't drop out of the pathway at some step along the way and not complete the process even when they start it. We need support from our nurse practitioners in the nephrology and the surgery side to help patients do this. And then, again, when it comes to communicating with patients, one thing that I've found to be particularly effective is to explicitly say to the patient that the vascular access is not going to make them go on dialysis sooner. That just because we have it doesn't mean we have to use it. Because a lot of times, even if they don't say that, I think that's a big barrier in patients' minds. I don't want dialysis, and if I get the catheter, I'm going to end up on dialysis. So I think we tell them that, and I think surgeons could tell them that as well. In terms of multidisciplinary, it was in the title of my talk, so I thought I should talk about that a little bit, because I definitely think that communication between nephrology and vascular surgery is crucial, so that we can ensure that they do initiate with a fistula and that we're not performing surgery on patients unlikely to survive, although I wish we could figure that out a little bit better. And I just put this here, you know, because I think I'm very fortunate to have, I understand how things work in my system fairly well, but the VA is more of a closed system. And out there in the real world, different nephrology practices are working with different surgical colleagues, and having a partnership where the nephrologists understand what happens after referral and what the expected time frame is going to be and what the process is in your surgical practice can really help them, I think, refer people to you at the right time. And then I think on the surgical side, and what I really see my colleagues doing, is tailoring your approach at times according to the imminence of dialysis initiation. And this maybe gets back to a little bit maybe catheter last, and there might be some times when a patient is right on the edge of dialysis when a graft should be considered, perhaps. So I'm going to end there and just say we have a lot of barriers to initiating dialysis with a working AV fistula. Increasing awareness of CKD and referral to nephrology could definitely increase the rate, but there are other challenges as well, and we need intensive support to try to improve those rates and coordination with you guys. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.